Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so page one. Introduction. Srila Jiva Goswami is revered as the most brilliant and scholarly Vaishnava of his era, quite likely of all time, within the Vaishnava tradition and to a growing extent in modern academic circles. Jiva Goswami's prolific writings have earned him the reputation as one of the greatest religious philosophers in history. Okay. So it's not just we're saying that, even other sampradayas, that they means scholars, means not just your regular devotees of that, but specifically the scholars of the other sampradayas read Jiva Goswami's work, especially this Tattva Sandarbha, like that, just because the way he uses the language is so perfect, right? Because those who are dealing with, you know, improper understandings of the philosophy, generally they do that by word juggling. Yeah. You just adjust something, move something, you know, put it in, count it as one sentence, do different things. But, and it means all the acharyas, you can take their work and juggle it, like that. But with Jiva Goswami's, even you juggle it, you still end up with the same thing. Right, because you have to remember, he went to Varanasi and studied, you know, grammar and logic for 20 years. Then he went to Vrindavan. Right? So most people, at maximum, study Sanskrit with grammar and everything, all of it together in 12 years. And that's when they're starting from a kid. So, you know what I'm saying? But he did 20 years. Right? So, there's no one that can write and explain things like Jesus. So it's not just we're saying that.
Who was he studying under?
That I'm not sure. He was just in Varanasi. Okay. No, he means Kashi Mishu was there. So many were there. So, you know, it's plenty of good association.
It's mentioned later in the study.
It's mentioned later, okay. Srila Rupa Goswami's nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami. Oh, this is Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami comments on his celebrated literary achievements as follows. Srila Rupa Goswami's nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami, has compiled so many books on devotional service that there is no counting them. In Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami has written conclusively about the ultimate end of devotional service. The Sat Sandarbha is the essence of all scripture. In the Sat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami set forth the truths about the transcendental love of Krishna. From this book, one can obtain a conclusive understanding of devotional service and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? The Sat Sandarbhas are an analysis of the Bhagavatam. Right? Because the Bhagavatam will be according to the conversation. Right? So that will be your reading. The analysis of it is the Sat Sandarbha. So Bhagavatam is already the essence of the Vedic literature, already the perfect, you know, fruit. So this is the essence of that. So that's why you can say it's the essence of all scripture. Sandarbha. I'm not exactly sure what the word Sandarbha means. Like that, you know?
Something to do with stringing the meaning
of the threat. The Sandesh generally means like can mean essence, like that. So Sandarbha, I don't know, there must be some kind of, yeah, you also have that San element, the San Kirtana San. So, could be. I don't know. Eventually find out. From this book, one can obtain a conclusive understanding of devotional service and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The most famous and formidable transcendental literature is the book named Gopal Champu. In this book, he has exhibited the ecstatic, loving transactions and pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The eternal pastimes of the Lord are established, and the transcendental mellows enjoyed in Vrindavan are completely described. So the Gopal Champu, he wrote the Harinamamrita Vyakarana. Right, so there's 3,000 sutras there that describe all the grammatical aspects of Sanskrit. Right, but now the difficulty is you might have to be reading your whole life to find an example of all those. Like, let's say, you know, nowadays they don't even put it in our books. But if you look in the older books, you know, you have a a e e ri 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 li ri. Now they drop the li ri. Like, but in the Vedic, when it opens, the what do you call it? Yeah, the Rig Veda, Agni Mi Ilale, it's right there. So then the thing is, so he writes the Gopal Champu, that one gives an example of every aspect of grammar that there is. So you have an example, you'll have seen it in use. Same time as then he says he describes the pastimes, and the mellows that are tasted in those pastimes. See, there's three things with one book. Right? And just doing one of them is enough of a, you know, scholarship. But he does all three. Right? So he establishes the bona fideness of them. He establishes the mellows tasted in them. Right? So one is the one end, you know, your ontology and epistemology. The other is the level of rasa. And in doing that, he uses all the elements of grammar. You know, that means all the literary embellishments, everything that there is. Right? That's the scholar. That's the Jiva Goswami. Right? Thus, Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and their nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami, as well as practically all their family members, lived in Vrindavan and published important books on devotional service. C.C. Madhyalila, 143 through 145, and Antya 4, 230 and 232. So in other words, this family is very special. Because you have Rup, Sanatan, and Jiva. Yes?
Rup, Sanatan, they were Nityasiddhas? Or
Rupa is a Nityasiddha. Uh-huh. Like that. It means, see, the position is that once coming to that transcendental platform, one is counted as a Nityasiddha. But of those who had never been conditioned, only Rupa and Raghunath were never conditioned. The other four Goswamis, like us, had been conditioned and had come to that platform through devotional service to the platform of prema, and now had come with Rupa and Raghunath, and were preaching. So they're known as the six Goswamis. The Prabhupada mentions that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Does that make sense? So the point is once you get to that platform of prema, no one makes any distinction anymore. Does that make sense? On the one hand, the Gopal Champu exhibits Jiva Goswami's poetic brilliance and nuanced realization of bhakti rasa, yet relishing the sweet taste of Krishna Lila as the divine prerogative of a select few. Hence the relative obscurity of the work, right? Basically no one's ever heard of it. Probably very less has even seen it. Probably even less have even, like, you know, how you say, tried to even look at it, you know. On the other hand, the Satsandarbhas are of interest to a broader range of scholars, for they serve as a systematic theology for the entire Gaudiya Vedanta tradition. While the Gopal Champu is a masterpiece of embellished meter, the Sandarbhas consist mainly of Sanskrit prose composed in terse, straightforward style. Such an encyclopedic work of philosophy indeed demands such an approach. Right, because otherwise in the poetry somebody might make some mistake and all that. I mean, those were honest poems, but others were sort of this way that's exactly written. That it's harder to twist them like that. Just like in Vedanta Sutra, ones that are a little bit more obvious that you could do something with than Shankaracharya does. And then in his commentaries, he says, like this, you go on interpreting. He doesn't comment on every verse because he can't actually twist every verse. But he makes it look for his disciples as if you could. So they sit there and crack their head against the wall trying to do it. Right? Keeps them off the streets. Right? Better a Mayavadi in a monastery than a Mayavadi on the streets. Right? Much less dangerous. So he was doing us
like
a favor.
Gang members.
Huh? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Better there, you know, in a pool hall or something. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers the following words of praise. Sri Rupa and Sanatana are adorned by the members of the Vishva Vaishnav Raja Sabha and are followers of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Dev, who incarnated to purify the people of Kali Yuga and award them the ultimate goal of life. Under the guidance of Sri Rupa and Sanatana, Sri Jiva Goswami composed his great work, the Sandarbhas. We do not have the ability to describe the glories of this work, which is divided into six parts. All the conclusions and thoughts of the Vaishnava Sampradaya are found in this work. Right, so that means everything's in there. It's not that something's left out. Right? If you find that it doesn't have everything in it, then that means there's something wrong with your perception. Right? As we see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that he's unable to, you know, glorify. And the literature that he's written, you know, he's probably single-handedly written more individual literatures than anybody else in the Sampradaya. And he's saying, you know, I can't glorify, it's just so great. Sajantoshini 10:12. In order to grasp the significance of this work, one must consider the ambitious task to which Jiva Goswami was entrusted. Aside from his shikshastakam prayers, Lord Chaitanya never committed his teachings to writing. Instead, Sri Chaitanya relied on his stalwart followers, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, to preserve, validate, and disseminate his vani for the benefit of humanity. And just what were those teachings? Right? Preserve, validate, and disseminate, because you have to document them. That's the first thing you have to do, is preserve. Right? When Manu talks about when you're dealing with economics, the first thing is to protect it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the first thing you must do. Then you, but here, having preserved it, then you have to validate it, because others will doubt that this is the correct conclusion. Right? Why will they doubt that? Because in the material world, there's only two conclusions, karma and jnana. There isn't a third conclusion. Right? You can have mixes of these, and they can fight like cats and dogs over it, though they're all discussing the same thing. Does that make sense? You know. So now you're establishing pure bhakti. That means you have to validate it, because otherwise it won't be taken as, you know, standard. And then disseminate, then you spread it. Then it's augmented and distributed. Right? So, yeah. Okay, so what were those teachings? Right, just notice it's under Rupa Sanatan he's written, so that means one is the Sambandha Acharya, one is the Abhideya Acharya, so everything is there. And Rupa Goswami being the Rasa Acharya, so the dynamics of how it's being done is all explained. So that means from the most technical points up to the most developed points of Rasa, he's gotten all that direction from Rupa Sanatan. Bhagavan Sambhanda Bhakti Abhideya Hoy Prema Prayojana Veditin Vastukoi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships. Right? We discussed that. You can't have a relationship without Krishna, so he is the central point. In illusion, you can think, yes, I'll have a relationship without, but how is it working out in the material world for everybody? Right? Yeah, that's the point. So, you know, as somebody, I think as Prabhupada was saying, every day proves our philosophy. Right? You know?
Yeah.
Acting in devotional service to him is one's real occupation. Right? Because the occupation is what you should be doing. So that's the real Abhideya. Right, Cole? So sometimes we take it, well, there's Abhideya, my devotional practice, and then there's my occupation that maintains myself in the world. But Abhideya means your actual occupation. Right? That's the real occupation. So you can't lose your real occupation for the one that's supposed to support it. Right? If one's a devotee, one has a vocational occupation to create, sustain the situation in which you perform devotional service. Right? But now, if that takes prominence over the other, what's the meaning? Like cleaning the kitchen and everything and getting everything becomes more prominent than cooking, or even cooking stops. All you do is clean and dust and get different things and go out to the market and find a new can opener that's better than the old one, replace it, but you never use it. Then what's the meaning? That's the meaning when somebody makes their occupation more prominent than devotional, than the practice of devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? That's what's happening. They all complain like, no, it's not like that. You don't understand all these different emotional things. But we're just talking facts here. What's the point of the kitchen? It's for cook. That's the real occupation of the kitchen. So the other is just the support. So therefore, vocational occupations are only to support one's actual real occupation of that devotional service. Does this make sense? It's simple. And attainment of love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. But these three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. So it's not that there are three subjects that are described there, then there's so many other things. It means these are the three subjects that the Vedic literature has described. Right? There isn't something else. Yes? No? Srinath Chakravartipad has expanded on these three tattvas of Lord Chaitanya in this important verse. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayas Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam Ramya Kachit Upasana Vraja Vadhu Vargena Ya Kalpita Shastram Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumarto Mahan Itam Gaura Mahaprabhur Matam Atas Tatra Dharo Nafara. The Supreme Lord is to be worshipped. The Supreme Lord to be worshipped is the son of the King of Braja. His personal abode is Vrindavan. The most favorable mode of serving him is that which was practiced by the young maidens of Braja. The scripture Bhagavatam is the spotless source of reliable knowledge. And pure love of God is the supreme goal of life. Such are the opinions of Gaura Mahaprabhu, and we therefore respect them implicitly. So therefore, Krishna, his abode, right? Then the Abhideya is in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, right? The goal is supreme, is prema, and Bhagavatam is the evidence, right? Then is now the opinions of Gaura Mahaprabhu were at odds with the reigning intellectual zeitgeist. What's a zeitgeist? I know what a poltergeist is. It's a zeitgeist.
Overall worldview and sentiment of the people.
Overall worldview in the sentiment of the people. So it is connected with poltergeist.
It means the spirit of the time.
Yeah. The spirit of the time.
Geist means spirit and sight means time.
Fancy word. This sounds very 1890-ish.
Vienna.
Very Bohemian. Sri Chaitanya's shiksha was diametrically opposed to the dominant Vedanta metaphysic of the time. Shankaracharya's Advaita Vedanta, and to a lesser extent, disagreed with established Vaishnava doctrines. Ramanujacharya's Vishishtadvait, Madhva's Dvait, Nimbarka's Dvaita Dvait, and Vishnuswami's Shuddhadvait. And lest one forget the prominence of the other Vedic philosophical schools, it should be recalled that even Nimai Pandit was for a time a vocal propounder of Navanyaya. Finally, as gleaned from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu's teachings also had to contend with the deeply entrenched non-Vedic religions of Buddhism and Islam. Right? So you have, these are who you're establishing. Now, we'll say, oh, well, it's not a big deal. But as we go on, you see these things have to be established. Like that. It's not understood. Then it gets distracted. Right? Because as things grow, then you become noticed. If you're small, no one cares. Right? And he says to a lesser extent, meaning because the four sampradayas, they were given a portion by Lord Chaitanya. Then they expand on that aspect, which in itself, because it's connected to the Lord, is perfect. But it doesn't bring out all aspects. Means all your fundamental truths are there, but the wideness of the understanding, or the depth of the understanding, that will be different. Does that make sense? It's not that someone has more or less philosophy. Each of the six Goswamis contributed to the mission of spreading Sri Chaitanya's teachings. Dozens upon dozens of commentaries, treatises, dramas, and worship manuals were written among them, each dealing with a specific topic. Srila Jiva Goswami's role is unique. However, as he set out to consolidate and systematize the entire canon of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, theology, on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, an effort culminating in the Sandarbhas. This challenge was compounded due to the fact that with the ebb and flow of time, the clear message of Srimad Bhagavatam was distorted by unscrupulous teachers. Furthermore, right, because the point is this, you're either teaching the pure essence, and then people, you have the element of naturally coming and taking advantage, and you're not worrying about expanding beyond how it expands naturally. The only point is to benefit others. But if you want to establish yourself in an already academic environment, you have to come up with a new philosophy. Right? Therefore, they'll be unscrupulous. You take something that is minor and make it very major. You know, it's not the important thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, say Akrura, he rode to, you know, from Mathura to Vrindavan, but he went on a chariot. So it's through the chariot that therefore he attained. And so you make a whole thing out of chariots, so everybody rides around in fancy cars. Right? That's all very much part of the religion. You understand? So this is what they do. They take some aspect, take it out of perspective, and then it's a new school. You know, wow, you know, he's into cars, what are you into? Hey, we're into bicycles, you know, we're eco friends. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's
yeah.
Furthermore, while all the standard schools of Vaishnavism implicitly trusted Srimad Bhagavatam, few appreciated its preeminent position, because all the acharyas accept it, quote it, deal with it, but it's not considered the main. Like in the Sri Sampradaya, the Vishnu Purana is their prominent book, right? Not Bhagavatam, though they have no problem with it, they accept it. Right? The Madhva is also, you know, they do, but they get more into Vedanta and stuff, yes. As theological next of kin, the four Vaishnav Sampradaya's teachings are based on the Bhagavatam to some extent. Yet it was up to the saintly reformer Jiva Goswami to revive its full glory and import. Right? And in the discharge of this task, Srila Jiva Goswami coined the term Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, or inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference, to describe Sri Chaitanya's metaphysical doctrine. Distinct from the other personalist schools, it was based squarely upon the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. Yes?
Baladev Vidya Bhushan? Did he not coin the phrase?
Oh, no. Here, it comes from Jiva Goswami. He just used it.
He commented on the Tapasandarbha Sutra.
Oh, he. Well.
He has a commentary on it. It's natural.
It is in the Sandarbhas in which we find Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva elucidated in its original and most complete form. Okay. Yeah. Footnote 1. Jiva Goswami is also famous for his Lagu Vaishnava Toshani, a verse-by-verse commentary on the Bhagavatam. and the Krama Sundarva, a commentary on the 10th canto. This marks Jiva Goswami as the first scholar in the line to explain the Bhagavatam in such detail. Okay. Right, because we have to remember why this comes out is because Bhagavatam is the first place where Vyasadeva gets Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. In other words, that is the conclusion of the Vedas. That's always been. It's not that it's a new thing. It's just that Lord Chaitanya brings out its preeminence. Because otherwise Bhagavatam was always there, but it wasn't taken as a major aspect. Right? As we can see, the other Vaishnavas are there. But Krishna, when Brahma asked for the essence of the Veda, having heard it, then he gave him the Chaturshloki. So the Chaturshloki is explaining that Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. The Narad, he gave that to Narad, Narad then gave that to Vyas. Right? Otherwise, we see in the Mahabharata, then basically means devotional service is the primary point, but this aspect of the proper performance of your duties, you know, to please the Lord, is basically where it ends. Right? Does that make sense? Now, when Ramananda Rai, when he had in his discussion with Lord Chaitanya, then where does he start the conversation? When Lord Chaitanya says, what's the essence? Right? He starts with that. Right? So, the point is that this is generally what's thought. The other sampradaya is Varnashram is very much important, at least with the Shris and the Madhvas. It's a very, they take it as when it says Dasyam in the nine processes. Varnashram is that Dasyam. You know, in doing your service, you do your service as in the mood of servant to the Lord. That's why Rupa Goswami comments that for us, we don't take Varnashram as part of the process. You know what I'm saying? Just like, does that make sense? It's not that that is the process. Right? Does that make sense? It's that that can be used in the process. And it's a very good, that's the social form recommended by Lord Chaitanya, but the devotion is that aspect, the pure devotion, that you're doing it without trying to do something for yourself, without motive. Does that make sense? So you may be functioning within Varnashram or outside Varnashram, but the point is that's what makes it work. Right? Someone may say, with that, oh, then we don't have to work within Varnashram, but what's your reason for not? Right? Because when we say inside or outside, inside means if you're conditioned, outside means if you're liberated. So if you're conditioned, you're working outside of it, why would you? Unless it's a part of your conditioning. You understand? And the liberated souls, if that need is there to work within it, they have no problem. You understand? In other words, as the neophyte, you perform your duties because you want the benefit. The madhyama is just easy to use. The uttama, could use or not, but what's the problem? What's the problem in using it? Since it's there, it works. Right? Arjuna, who doesn't have a problem using a kshatriya nature in Krishna's service. It's there, it works. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, something like that. Srila Jiva Goswami arrived at the conception of Achinta Veda Veda by first analyzing the way in which one should understand Srimad Bhagavatam. In this, he opted a novel approach. What could be more direct, simple, yet perfect, a means of understanding the Bhagavatam's message than examining the minds of its principal speaker and author, Sukadeva Goswami, and Veda Vyas, respectively? He himself describes his approach to the gargantuan task ahead of him in the first installment, the Tattva Sandarbha. Vaktu Shri Sukasya Shri Veda Vyasasya Cha Samana Haridayam Tasmat Vaktur Haridayan Rupam Eva Sarvatra Tat Paryam Parya Lochaniyam Nanyata. The speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sri Sukha, shared the same attitude as Sri Veda Vyas. Therefore, in all cases, we should analyze the purport of the Bhagavatam strictly in accordance with the attitude of a speaker, not otherwise. We must conclude that any analysis that disagrees with Sukadeva's ideas will only create a perverted understanding. Atakramena Vishtaras No, vishtaratas tataiva tatparyam nirnetum sambandha videya prayojaneshu sadbhi sandharbher nirdesh shyamaneshu pratamam. To definitely establish the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam as outlined above, the six sandarbhas set forth in detail the topics, one after another, of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Tattva Sandarbha 49-50. So here again, he is a staff saying that in this line like this, as Lord Chaitanya is given, this is how we're establishing it. So it's not just a convenient way to put things together. You know, just like different people in management put things together in different ways to analyze it so it can be presented and you have some kind of a form or a skeleton to work from that everybody else in that kind of consideration can then refer back to. What he's presenting here is, no, this is the way of analyzing. Right? It's not that there's another way of analyzing. This is the way of analyzing. Right? This is the most unique and natural way to present the quintessence of Srimad Bhagavatam, according to the faith and experience of its writer and its prime speaker, revealed as they are within the text. Followers of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada will no doubt recognize this approach. Quote, if we want to take a particular medicine, then we have to follow the directions written on the label. We cannot take the medicine according to our own whim or the direction of a friend. It must be taken according to the directions on the label or the directions given by a physician. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita should be taken or accepted as it is directed by the speaker himself. The speaker of Bhagavad Gita is Lord Sri Krishna. Therefore, we should take Bhagavad Gita as it is directed by the personality of Godhead himself. Bhagavad Gita, introduction. ISKCON devotees may gloss over the as-it-is analysis as a standard literary convention. Yet, within the field of scriptural hermeneutics, it is surprisingly rare. In spite of its obvious appeal, no other scholar Acharya had ever thought to examine the contents of Srimad Bhagavatam from that angle. While no shortage of essays have been written on Srimad Bhagavatam, no one has analyzed the text as finely as Srila Jiva has. We catch here? So what's being brought out here is that Jiva Goswami's point is, as the speaker spoke it, that's how it's supposed to be taken. And then how did Prabhupada name the Gita? As it is, it's supposed to be taken exactly according to the speaker. So this is something very unique, very specific. Right? You know, but as pointed out, we just take it, it rolls off the tongue, it sounds really great. You know? Yeah? You know what I'm saying? It's just like you're saying being more literary than, you know, means what is the general kind of, mood of the populace, right? And then the other devotee brings out the spirit of the time. Now, that sounds really great, right? You know, you can get behind that, yes. Right? Yes. So that's the whole point. So we just take it as it is, just so, yeah. But no, it means something very exact.
I've seen there was one, he wrote the Bhagavad Gita as I see it.
Bhagavad Gita as I see it.
I found that in the shopping hall.
Yeah? They're not around anymore, are they?
And there's another one, Bhagavad Gita as it was.
Oh, yeah.
As it was.
70 verses or something.
How about as it will be?
As yours.
As it was in the future.
As it will have become.
As it will have become. Yeah.
Maybe not.
No. His approach is unique, natural, and undefeatable. Jiva Goswami has got six sandarbhas. This is a quote from Prabhupada. So these sandarbhas are so philosophically discussed that throughout the whole world there's not a single philosopher who can defy these Jiva Goswami six sandarbhas. Right? Means anybody who's actually trying doesn't actually understand what they're doing. Srila Prabhupada's lecture, Srimad Bhagavatam 111, London, August 6, 1971. Indeed, no one has so much as attempted to pick the Sandarbhas apart. A salient point, considering that they either refute or reduce to supporting roles the doctrines of all major Vaishnava sects. So it'd be hard. Just basically, it's one of those, just nobody touches them. That's why you even see, as gently as it is, that everybody reads the Tattva Sundarbha. But after that, whether they're reading or not, that's another thing. But that one they read. Because it deals, establishes Bhagavatam, the authority, Vaishnava, like this. So then. Yeah. The Sundarbhas established the full theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all other systems, whether Vedic or non-Vedic. Right? It doesn't matter. The point is, there's a conclusion. As we said, the actual conclusion of the Vedas is a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. But you can get, you know, four other bona fide Vaishnava views and another six, you know, just general, how you say, Vedic. Like that. So you can actually end up with 10 views, but the real essence of it is the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Throughout this sixfold treatise, Jiva Goswami manifests his superhuman command over the vast body of Vedic literature. From the text of the Shruti, Upanishads, Puranas, Itihasas, Tantras, Agamas, there seems not a page unturned by the Goswami. His mastery of their contents make it appear almost as though he wrote them himself. Studying such Sandarbhas, one is held spellbound by this literary opulence alone, to say nothing of the realization he so kindly shares within. These Sandarbhas provide a philosophical foundation for the ecstasy and love that Sri Chaitanya embodied, and that the author experienced so deeply. It is no exaggeration to assert that, through this gift, Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has performed the greatest welfare to humanity.
Nice.
If that wasn't enough, Sri Jiva further blessed us with an auto commentary on the first four Sandarbhas, the Sarva Samvadini, footnote 2. Why, one may ask, would an author bother commenting on his own work rather than simply clarify the original? While we consider the Brihad Bhagavatamrita to be his magnum opus, Srila Sanatana Goswami, out of humility, denied any credit for it. Rather, he considered it the work of his Ishtadev, Sri Madan Mohan, who merely used him as a writing instrument. Sanatana Goswami does concede, however, to penning the Brihad Bhagavatamrita's Digdarshini commentary in order to pardon himself for what he considered the rampant fault-finding contained in his former work. How could I dare, quote, how could I dare to enter into the inner chamber of Krishna's palace and judge who is a greater devotee than another? And in order to judge who is a greater devotee, you need to find defects and faults in the devotional service of Krishna's eternal associates like Rukmini, Satyabhama, and even Uddhava. End quote. Jiva Goswami follows in the footsteps of Param Guru by commenting on the Sandarbhas in a separate volume. One possible reason for this arises in text 4 of the Mangalacharan. Often complex. Mangalacharan. Okay, that's the end of that. So now we have to go back wherever we were. And where will we? Ah, yes. Although brief compared to the work it explains, the form and function of the Sarva Samvadini resembles that of the complex footnotes used in modern-day scholarship. It provides supplementary, sometimes highly technical, information to the Sandarbhas. One may be tempted to observe that the Sarva Samvadini is in fact a book about a book. That is about a third book. That is about a fourth book, which in turn is about another big set of books. Okay, so here. So the Sarva Samvadini is a commentary on his Satsandarbhas, on the book. That is about a third book, the Bhagavatam. That is about, okay, the fourth book. And what's the fourth book?
Vedanta Sutra.
Vedanta Sutra, which in turn is about another big set of books, means the Vedas. Okay, got it. To elaborate, the Sarva Samvadini is Jiva Goswami's commentary on the Sandarbhas, which are themselves a treatise on the Bhagavat Puran. Likewise, the Bhagavatam is Srila Vedavyasa's personal commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which, to boot, represented the concentrated essence of the Vedic literature. To compound matters further, the study guide is our humble attempt to make this subject matter accessible to you, the present-day reader. So you're saying that this is a commentary on the commentary on the commentary on the commentary. Yeah. In his commentary, Srila Jiva presupposes the reader's acquaintance with the sundry subtle points of Vedic logic, rhetoric, Sanskrit grammar, linguistics, metaphysics, etc. Right? Yes? No?
No. That was the first 3 years.
That was the first 3 years. Yeah. He just takes it that, of course, you know all this stuff. Who doesn't, right? Yeah. This is education. Yeah. Right, you know? Because logic means otherwise you don't think straight. Rhetoric means how to present. Like that, grammar, because you have to have a basis because you're using language, so why are you using the language the way you are? You know? Linguistic metaphysics, you have to understand how things are functioning within the, you know, you have to understand the Shankhya and everything. So then you put all that together. So that's the reason for all the different aspects. And even to appreciate the 10th cant, you have to understand all those aspects. And then to be able to apply it nicely, then the 11th canto further shows how that should be done.
Right? In Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book,
yes,
it seems clear that he did actually understand.
Yes, he already did that. Because anything that needs to be known from those others as a basis is already brought in. That's why you can read it so nicely and you get the same understanding. Every devotee reads it, gets the same understanding. So it's so perfect. Right? Like that. But according to your level of realization, you'll be able to relish more and more of it. You know, so that's the thing. It gets deeper and deeper. It's not just something you read to the kids at night. In his commentary, Sri Jiva therefore, due to his intricate nature, we'll be quoting selectively from the Sarva Samvadini whenever appropriate and supplementing it with additional background references and explanations. In this regard, we express our sincere gratitude to His Grace Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, whose lucid translations, keen insights, and realized commentary constitute the bulk of this work. In order to deepen one's appreciation of the Tattva Sandarbha, one is encouraged to read the BBT translation in its entirety. It is stated that without the Satsandarbhas, one must struggle to understand the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and still he may not succeed, right? So Srila Prabhupada has written that into his commentaries, like that. Then we can appreciate, right? However, one who has studied the Satsandarbhas will have no misgivings about the essence of the Bhagavatam, right? The point is studying Prabhupada's purports, you'll understand Bhagavatam. But what's being pointed out here, technically, is by studying the Sandarbhas, you'll better understand Prabhupada's purports. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? In other words, he's showing that how to apply that and conclude that in a very straightforward fashion. One who has studied the Satsandarbhas will have no misgivings about the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Satsandarbhas thus make for required reading for any serious student of Indian philosophical thought, not to speak of those descending the line of Jiva Goswami. As publishers of this study guide, it is our aim to help navigate you through this voluminous, often complex work as a means of assisting in your sincere attempt to attain the goal of all transcendental knowledge, Krishna Prema. In Anucheda 180 of Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami begs forgiveness from Sri Krishna for any mistake he may have made in revealing his deity's confidential leelas. Before presenting this work to you, the reader, we invoke his words of supplication, replacing Sri Krishna's names with that of our acharyas. May the all-compassionate Sri Jiva Goswami forgive us for even the smallest wrong we may have committed. End quote. A biographical sketch of Srila Jiva Goswami. Wow. Quite a serious sketch. Okay, family lineage. Srila Jiva Goswami was the youngest amongst the celebrated six Goswamis of Vrindavan. While his exact dates are debated, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Abhidhan states that Jiva Goswami lived between 1433 to 1518 in the Shaka era. Okay, Shaka era, which is 1511 to 1596, C-E. You don't like A-D?
The more Christian.
It's more devotion. From the Bhakti Ratnakar, we are able to trace Jiva Goswami's lineage back 7 generations. In the 12th century Shakabda, a Vaishnav named Sarvagya appeared in a prosperous Saraswat Brahmin family in Karnataka, a clan which belonged to the Bharadwaj Gotra. Right? So in other words, the Saraswat Brahmins are considered the top Brahmins. Right? And then when the Saraswati dried up, then they moved from there, migrated. So one group went, basically just continued down to south to Karnataka, basically. They're known as Saraswat Brahmins. One group went to Bengal, and then eventually kind of came back to there, or got to there. They're known as the Gaur Saraswat Brahmins, right? So of the two, the Gaur Saraswat are considered in actually a better position than the Saraswat. So he's technically from that Gaur Saraswat line, right? But because they've been trapped there, anybody there are Saraswat Brahmins. That's the general term. But those who had come through Bengal that are known in that way. And then Bharadwaj Gotra, that's considered very top Gotra. This indicates he was either in the family or disciple succession of Bharadwaj Muni. After a dispute with his brother, Harihara, Sarvagya's son, Rupeshwara, was divested of his land and migrated from the south to the east. Rupeshwara's son, Padmanabha, settled on the bank of the Ganga in Naihati, West Bengal. Padmanabha had a grandson named Kumaradev, or Sri Kumara, who relocated to the village of Fatyabad, an area bordering Bakala Chandradweep, today known as the Jessore district of Bangladesh. No one will appreciate it, but just Jessore to speak through their nose. Jessore, like that. Of Kumaradev's many sons, the three youngest took to the path of Vaishnavism. Amara, later Sanatana, Santosha, later Rupa, and Vallabha, later Anupam. Right. So they were Gorsar, so they're from there. So when he left Karnataka, he went back to, you know, where they were originally from. That was the whole. Does that make sense? Yeah. All three were from childhood attracted to the Lord. Amara and Santosha were especially attracted to Krishna, Vallabha to Ramachandra. As adults, the brothers proved extremely competent scholars and managers. Impressed by their ability, the Mughal tyrant of Bengal, Nawab Hussein Shah, compelled them into government service. Amara was appointed the Nawab's prime minister, Santosh the chief assistant minister, and Vallabha the state treasurer. In this way, the Nawab freed himself from military expeditions by turning most of the responsibilities of governing over to the three brothers, who established their residence in the town of Ramakeli, near the Nawab's capital, in the present-day Malda district of Bengal. It is in this place that Srila Jiva Goswami was born. At this time, the three brothers were also awarded the title Mulak for their government service. Srila Prabhupada comments in this connection. Yeah, I think the Nawab's in Malda, where his capital was, that's where the stones were taken. You know, made the three deities on this side that are, you know, Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mahan, like that. So, I can't remember who the devotee was, but he came there and he said he wanted these stones. And they asked why. He says, I want to make deities out of them. So then the Nawab said, well, you know, if you can take them away by floating them down the Ganga, then you can have them. You know, so naturally, what does that mean in his mind? You know, you're not going to get it. You know, most will turn away. And he says, fine. You know, so they got the men, pulled them out, put them in the Ganga, and he floated them down to, you know, where their place was and made the deities. So close to this is where Rupa and Sanatana live. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada comments on this connection. Our personal family is connected with the Mulaks of Mahatma Gandhi Road in Calcutta. And we often used to visit the Radha Govinda temple. Our family Gotra, original genealogical line, is the Gotama Gotra. of the line of disciples of Gautama Muni. And our surname, Day, is Day. But due to their accepting the post of zamindars in the Muslim government, they received the title Mullah. Just as the English government gives rich and respectable persons the title Lord, so the Muslims give the title Mullah to rich, respectable families that have intimate connection with the government. Thus, the title Mullah is found not only among the Muslims, but also among the Hindu aristocracy. The qualifications for receiving it are wealth and respectability. Sisiadi Lila 1084. Santosha became known by his official title, Dabir Kash, and Amara was called Sakir Malik. But despite their powerful positions, their only real joy in life lay in serving Krishna and his devotees. They made their wealthy estate a suitable place for remembering Krishna by planting groves of Kadamba and other trees that grow in Vrindavan, the site of Krishna's pastimes, and by building replicas of Krishna's favorite ponds, the sacred Radhakund and Shyamakund. The brothers also hosted many learned pundits, and discussions of the Bhagavatam and other shastras went on constantly in their assembly. Meeting with Lord Chaitanya. Yes.
Did you mention before that they used to have like 20 brahmanas or something? And then
I think it said no, that was Sanatana Goswami had 30 who would discuss.
Right.
But it's just that they would sit together and discuss something like that, there would be a leader. What we were talking about before of that was Madhvacharya would have 6 brahmanas and he would tell each one, you know, a verse from 6 different works he was writing. Because you have to write with ink and it has to dry. So he says the first one, the first, then the second. So by the time he's finished the 6th, the first one is dried, now he can do the next. Right? And Jiva Goswami would do a similar thing because you're writing on palm leaves like that. So he would write, because one palm leaf, you have a verse on one side, then you turn it over, you have the verses on the other side. Then you have the next palm leaf, right? Because they're put together. So what he would do was he would write on the page 1 on the first palm leaf, then he'd write page 3 on the next. Then when one was dry, he'd turn it over, write page 2. And then when page 3 was dry, he'd turn it over and write page 4. You understand? So that's how he would write, because he just wrote alone. Right? So this is scholarship. But still, for Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami to discuss, you know, Bhagavatam, to sit with 30 pundits so that you could get some kind of enough discussion and depth, then, you know, this is serious. Meeting with Lord Chaitanya. The three brothers had heard about Lord Chaitanya, who was still living as a family man in Navadvip, and despite feeling utterly unqualified, were eager to meet him. Right, so that's the point. One's not qualified, but you still want to meet. Right? The modern context, if you're unqualified, then you don't do anything. Right? But the point in relationship is, even you feel yourself unqualified, you still make the endeavor. Right? So makes sense. You know, as long as there is the basic understanding. They considered themselves degraded and untouchable, right? Because they're working with the government. Their father, Kumaradev, had been so strict in his Brahminical principles that if he even saw the face of a meat eater, he would fast for the day. They simply, you know, with them all day. Now they found themselves paid servants of a meat eater, the Yavana king. Nonetheless, their enthusiasm impelled them to begin corresponding with Lord Chaitanya, and in one letter the Lord encouraged them to be patient. Hara, Vyasanini Nari Vyagapi Griha Karmashu Tareva Svadyayat Yantar Navasanga Rasayanam. If a woman is attached to a man other than her husband, she will appear very busy in household affairs, though within her heart always relishing the company of her paramour. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 1:2:11. So this verse comes from Lord Chaitanya. It's one because Rupa Goswami always quotes this. Soon after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left home to enter the renounced order, he began traveling and preaching, often followed by large crowds. Right? Because the point is that it's not a matter of the manifestation, that will come with time. The most important is the mood. So the proper performance of one's duties in the situation, despite the mood, that's actually more important. So this verse is given by Rupa Goswami as an example of spontaneous devotional service. The point is that spontaneous is not, like I said, whimsical or sporadic. Right? It's consistent. So that means the duties are being performed. So one will think that they're just a regular sadhaka. Right? Because they're performing their regular duties. Right? But it's the mood that makes it spontaneous, not the activity. Right? Soon after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left home to enter Yunnan's order, he began traveling and preaching, often followed by large crowds. En route from Puri to Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya decided to stop in Ramakeli. Meanwhile, Hussein Shah received news that this sannyasi was creating a stir in the countryside. But by consulting with Dabir Kash and other ministers, the Nawab decided that Chaitanya was a worthy saint, or even God himself, and ordered that no one interfere with his doings, right? Because otherwise this large crowd is coming. You know, it could be quite a disturbance, especially if you don't know what's the point or anything like this. Because going north to go to Vrindavan is going by the capital, you know. Still, Dabir Kash worried that Hussein Shah, capricious as he was, could change his mind and turn against Lord Chaitanya. Thus, in the middle of the night, Dabir Kash went incognito with Shakir Malik to warn the Lord of the potential danger. The two approached Lord Chaitanya, right? Because you convinced a powerful person, but in his mind, it's his power it's his own authority that's his power. So if somehow or another someone else makes a comment and he changes his mind, then everything changes. It's not that he necessarily sticks to his word, or it's not that he's working on based on Shastra, so therefore there would be more of consistency, right? This is all based on that, you know, he does what he likes, right? And you have a very, you know, minimal kind of framework of religion to hold it together. So basically, as long as you accept Allah, then everything's fine, right? That's the main thing. So that leaves a lot of leeway to do all kinds of stuff, right? Yeah, that's the thing. The two approached Lord Chaitanya with straws between their teeth as a sign of humility, bowed prostrate before him, and with plaintive prayers confessed their unfitness to receive his mercy. Sri Chaitanya showered them with affection and accepted them as disciples by awarding them new names. My dear Dabir Kash, you two brothers are my old servants. From this day your name will be changed to Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana. Now please abandon your humility, for my heart is breaking to see you so humble. I really had no business in coming to Bengal, but I have come just to see you two brothers. In Madhva Lila 1, 207-13. Right? So that the whole point, he's coming to see them. It's not like he's going to Vrindavan, but he can go to Vrindavan other ways. Right? Because that's a little bit long. I mean, it's nice you can go up the Ganges and just follow the Ganga. That's one of the traditional, you know, Vedic ways of traveling. It's considered very auspicious, like that. But he came to see the brothers. On this occasion, Sri Chaitanya also bestowed upon their younger brother the name Anupam. The three brothers, Rup, Sanatana, and Anupam, then made plans to abandon their material life and join him. And they engaged brahmanas in performing purificatory rituals to help them quickly realize this hope. Soon, Rupa, so Lord Chaitanya, after that, went back. Right? Because he had actually only gone there to see them. So they came out to see him, and so then, you know, he stopped. Soon, Rupa and Anupam loaded the bulk of their wealth on a large boat and left Ramakeli for their hometown, leaving their senior brother Sanatana alone to deal with Hussein Shah. In case Sanatana might need emergency funds, Rupa deposited a large sum with a merchant in Ramakeli and informed Sanatana about this in a letter. So a large sum, but it wasn't a boat. A large boat. Right? Because what he left is a sum, so we can get an idea. He left as a sum, 10,000 gold coins. Right? And it's something you have to be able to leave with the guy, and it can't be too obvious, right? So now, you know, what's in the rest of the boat? Yeah.
They were vegetarians as well, so it's kind of cheap cost of living.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's no problem. The rest of their wealth, yes, just even better return, right? You know? The rest of their wealth he distributed amongst Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and their own family members. So when he got back to their hometown, then he distributed all that. Right? So I guess that's where the maybe Mullet family got well situated, and the investments that they had were very great. So then from there, then, because see, what does that mean? One may say this and that, because, you know, we'll say Prabhupada's family, they're Vaishyas, and here is their Brahmins. But what does Kayastha mean? Kayastha means a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya who works for someone on a salary. That's a Kayastha. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't. So because of that, it works in that. And then if you don't want to do that, then they'll generally do business as that. Because you've already, your position you've taken, you know, so it means if you go from that kind of position as a paid worker up to doing business, no one's going to mind because you have come from the aristocracy. So when Prabhupada says, this is our line, you can mean directly, this is the line. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's a Brahminical line, just like Prabhupada said. You know, the ancestors, they came from up country, right? Because that's because the Saraswat Brahmins came down from up country, from Punjab, you know, and then down into Ayodhya, and then from there down into, you know, like that. Yep. No. But, you know, Prabhupada doesn't get into the detail because it's not of importance. Just like the Rupa and Sanatana weren't worried about establishing their Brahminical identity. So the others, it's no big deal. Rupa and Anupam got news that Lord Chaitanya was attempting to visit Vrindavan. And they started traveling in that direction, right? He had gone back and now was going to go a different direction. By then, Lord Chaitanya was already on his way back from Vrindavan, and the brothers met him at Prayag. The story of their meeting is recounted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 19, as well as in Srila Kavi Karnapur's Chaitanya Chandradaya. Rema la per dridatara parishvanga rangai prayag prayage tam shri rupa samam anupame nanu jagraha deva. At Prayag, the Lord bestowed mercy on Rupa and his brother Anupam, holding loving conversations with them and embracing them with wholehearted pleasure. Chaitanya Chandradaya 9:38. Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami for 10 days and blessed him with the power to disseminate pure devotional service. Afterwards, he promised that soon the brothers could visit him in Puri. While waiting to reunite with their brother Sanatan, Rupa and Anupam went to Vrindavan and took up lives of extreme renunciation and intense blissful meditation on the Supreme Lord's pastimes. As the time approached for Lord Jagannath's cart festival in Puri, Rupa and Anupam started the long walk south. In 1514, during their journey, Anupam succumbed to illness and left his body on the bank of the Ganga. It is said that he ascended to the spiritual sky, to the Ayodhya division of Sri Goloka. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, there is the following statement. Vallabha was given the name Anupam by Sri Gaurasundar, but he was always absorbed in the devotional service of Lord Ramachandra. He did not know anyone but Sri Ramachandra. But he knew that Chaitanya Gosai was the same Lord Ramachandra. Interesting, because today's Ramajai. Today, Lord Ramachandra defeated Ravana. Okay, childhood. In the meantime, Sri Jiva was growing into a remarkable young Vaishnava. Did I mention he's Anupam's son? Whose son is he? Because he's a nephew, so there must be some connection.
Yeah, he's Anupam's son.
He's Anupam's son. Like, that means you mentioned something, but it didn't come out so clear.
Yeah, it was there in the beginning.
Okay. In the meantime, Sri Jiva is growing into a remarkable young Vaishnava. The Bhakti Ratnakara intimates that Jiva Goswami had the fortune of receiving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's direct darshan during the latter's visit to Ramakeli. Sri Jivadi Sangopane Prabhuke Dekila. Though older than three at the time, the vision of Lord Chaitanya left an indelible impression on the mind. We learn also from the Gauranga-desh Deepika that Jiva Goswami was the son of Vallabha and a scholar of exemplary character. Okay, well, here you mentioned that. Shushila Pandita Shri Man Jiva Shri Vallabhat Maja. From early childhood, Sri Jiva had no interest in childish activities. Narahari Chakrabarti explains that, even while playing with friends, he was interested only in games related to Krishna. Narahari Chakrabarti is who wrote Bhakti Ratnakar. So from there, he made images of Krishna and Balaram and would worship them with flowers and sandalwood paste and dress and decorate them. He would gaze upon them with unblinking eyes, looking for all the world like a golden doll himself, sitting motionless on the floor. When he had paid obeisances to the deities, his eyes filled with tears. He would offer their lordship sweets and then take the prasad and distribute it to his friends. Bhakti Ratnakara 1:719-23. Moreover, Sri Jiva was deeply absorbed in his educational pursuits. Studying under the local pundits, he showcased prodigious attitude for learning by mastering rhetoric, grammar, and poetry from a young age. Because generally, rhetoric, grammar, and poetry are later. Right? They're not generally first topics. Good grammar everybody studies, but to say you mastered grammar, then generally it's considered a 12-year course. Then you master grammar. All were amazed at his brilliance. Sri Jiva, however, was exceptionally fond of Srimad Bhagavatam. This, coupled with his keen intellect, left no doubt in his teachers' minds that he would grow up to be a great saint. However, Jiva's mind became distracted ever since his father and uncles left for Vrindavan. He abandoned his jewels and fine dress, his comfortable bed, and his various amusements. It was though nothing interested him anymore. He could not bear hearing news of political and other material affairs. Bhakti Ratnakara 1:686-688. When he learned that his father had left the world, Sri Jiva became extremely saddened. In a dream, he witnessed his own beloved Sri Ramakrishna assume the jubilant dancing forms of Nitai Gauranga. Placing the dust of the lotus feet on his head, the two lords then disappeared. This vision greatly consoled Sri Jiva, who was anxious to leave behind his family life and adopt full-time service to Gaur-Nitai. He was hesitant to do this, however. As the only son, he was responsible for his widowed mother's welfare. Right, so here the point is that this opulent life, it has limited, how you say, value for the devotee, because as you one advances, it has less and less interest. Right? It's not that it's not used, but his point is his personal trying to be so fancy is not there. Doesn't mean you don't use the facilities, but the point is it doesn't have an interest, because in the beginning it's very interesting to us. But after a while, it's just its only value is its use to be utilized in Krishna service. Right. Navadvip pastimes. Friends suggested that Jiva go to Navadvip to bathe himself in the coolness emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Prabhu to mitigate the burning grief in his mind and heart. Accepting, Sri Jiva traveled to Navadvip Dham. There, at the home of Srivas Pandit, Sri Jiva fell down at the lotus feet of Nityananda Prabhu, who blessed the boy with his foot dust and then embraced him. Sri Jiva swooned in ecstasy. Seeing his love, Lord Nityananda's emotions welled up like an ocean tide. The two of them toured the nine islands of Navadvip, taking darshan of the holy places of the Lord's pastimes. This marked the beginning of the Navadvip Parikram tradition, still practiced to this day. After keeping Jiva with him for some time, Nityananda Prabhu offered him to join his two uncles, Sri Rupa and Sanatan, in Vrindavan. So that's what, how it Bhaktivinoda Thakur documents. And Navadvip Dham Mahatmya then is about this parikrama of Lord Nityananda and Jiva Goswami. Yes, go to Vrindavan. That place has been awarded to your family, to your father and uncles by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, you must go there immediately. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 4, 2, 34. Yes.
Is it just these things that place has been awarded? Means
yes.
They have been allowed to enter?
They've been you could say awarded that they've been allowed to enter. But you could also say awarded means that that is their place. Right. In other words, they've been given Vrindavan as their place to live, meaning, and if you say the element of enter means they actually are living in Vrindavan, not on that covering of Prabhu Maya that we so dearly love. Yes. Varanasi pastimes. On his way to Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami stopped for some time in Varanasi, India's crest jewel of scholarship and learning. There he studied Vedanta under the tutelage of Sri Madhusudan Vachaspati, a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the greatest scholar, so his disciple, would be well established. Yes. Madhusudan Vachaspati was instructed in Vedanta after his guru's storied defeat at the hands of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. Thus, Sri Jiva mastered the same devotional conclusions taught by the Lord himself. Right? So, Lord Chaitanya instructed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, attempted to instruct the Lord. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya instructed his disciple, this Madhusudana Vachaspati. And then he instructed Jiva Goswami. Right? So then, good lineage here.
Yeah, pretty good.
Additionally, it was in Varanasi that Sri Jiva deepened his command over Sanskrit, and within a short period of time mastered the six systems of Indian philosophy, Siddharshanam. Right? Because they're all parts of the Vedas, so they're one ways of looking. So certain mechanical aspects of them are correct, their conclusions are wrong. But the mechanics that they're working with are not necessarily wrong. Like, logic isn't wrong. But if you're going to say, by material logic, we'll understand the Supreme, that's wrong. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the problem. This vast erudition is made plain through his voluminous writings, which run circles around rival concepts with ease. Varanasi's top scholars were dumbstruck by Sri Jiva's uncommon brilliance. Upon completing his studies, Sri Jiva proceeded to Vrindavan, where he took shelter of his uncles, Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. Vrindavan pastimes. In Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami studied the esoteric principles of devotional service, Bhakti Tattva, as imparted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his dearmost disciples. Among other engagements, Jiva Goswami worked hard to assist his uncles in writing transcendental literature. In particular, Srila Rupa Goswami depended on Jiva's help to edit and publish his numerous books. This was no small feat. According to Krishnadas Kaviraj, Sri Rupa's writings are said to number in excess of 100,000 original verses, all of which had to be painstakingly copied by hand. Jiva Goswami also assisted his uncles in the work of establishing temples and revealing the holy places of Sri Krishna's pastimes. Srila Prabhupada remarks, in Vrindavan, he established the Dhrada Damodar temple, where, after retirement, we had the opportunity to live from 1962 until 1965, when we decided to come to the United States of America. CC Adi Lila 1084. According to Bhakti, because in his place, there was a main seat, all the Goswamis would come there and sit and discuss and everything. like that. Though they had their own temples, but that was a, they would come and sit there. So it was considered a very special, special place. According to Bhakti Ratnakara, the deities of Radha Damodar were personally sculpted by Rupa Goswami on the order of Lord Krishna in a dream. Anyone seen? Right? They're this big. Like that. Because we're used to these big ones. These are Pratibimba. These have been put in after. Because the original deities are in Jaipur. You come out, I'm not sure which is the gate, but one of the main gates, generally the one you mainly go in. That main road that it's on, just if you, means going up that, on the right side, I think it's down, second or third building or something, there's some steps that start right from the street and go all the way up. Yeah. That's the Radha Damodar temple. And then they're this thing. So Rupa Goswami made them himself. Shishi Radha Damodar then expressed to Rupa Goswami the desire to be worshipped by his nephew. Right, so they got him to carve, and then afterwards said, well, we want to be worshipped by him. Srila Rupa Goswami spent his last days at the Radha Damodar temple being served by Jiva Goswami. Like that. Because we were thinking, well, you know, what about Radha Govinda? Radha Govinda wasn't finished until after Rupa Goswami left. He never saw it finished. Like that. So it was never, used specifically like that. The old Radha Govinda temples, sometimes you see there in the back, like that. They're much smaller and everything like that. Mostly you don't see them like that because they're behind big walls and everything like that. But there's the old temples there, so that's where they were. So it's just, down the road a bit from there. Yeah, they're kind of behind, like Radharaman, Shamasundar, that kind of, actually a little bit more to the other side. Preaching activities. After the disappearance of his uncles, it was Srila Jiva Goswami who shone like a brilliant sun, illuminating the world in their absence. Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Goswami Thakur comments in his Anubhasya to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. After the disappearance of Rupa and Sanatan, Jiva was established as the topmost teacher of doctrine in the Sampradaya. He engaged everyone in the worship of Krishna through teaching the truths given by Mahaprabhu himself, Anubhasya 110, 85. Next, so here 110.85 means 1 will be Adi Lila, 10 will be 10th chapter, and 85 verse. That's, sometimes you see that in the commentaries. That's another way of putting it. You understand? Like that. You can either say, like Prabhupada, Adi Lila, then you just give the chapter and verse, or you can say Adi Lila will just be 1, right? Mandi Lila will be 2. Antili would be 3. So you see both ways of usage. Okay. One that just came up is that we got distracted, as we mentioned before, is that, we've said it, that to just be clear on it, is that the writing the book then is clear in its way, and as you say, is inspired by the Lord. So here, Sanatana Goswami or Baladeva Dibhushan, they're writing under the direction of the Lord. And so then they write it just as it's given. Then they'll write a commentary on it. But in any case, when you put together a work, it has its natural form of presentation. And to put in all the commentary might break that rhythm. You might not make the connection. Right? So then after, to fill it out, you write the commentary. Does that make sense? Because just like in Bhagavatam, you have verse 1, it has a huge commentary in Prabhupada's book, but then there's verse 2. So you can see the connection between verse 1 and 2. But otherwise, if it was just put together like in the modern where it just flows through, you might not actually catch what's verse 1, what's verse 2, what's verse 3. So you don't know what's commentary and what's being commented on. So this way it makes it very exact also. Right? Jiva Goswami became the undisputed acharya for all the Vaishnavas in Bengal, in Vrindavan, Bengal, Orissa, indeed the world over. His word was considered infallible, and pilgrims traveled on foot the length and breadth of India for his audience. At that time, Jiva Goswami also established the Vishva Vaishnava Rajya Sabha, World Vaishnava Association. I would tend to put the wouldn't use World Vaishnava Association. I wouldn't use that. I mean, if you're going to use that, why not use International Society for Krishna Consciousness?
Right.
You know, because World Vaishnava Association is the same kind of thing. Because Vishnu means international or world, so you do get that. Vaishnav Raja, you know, means Lord Chaitanya, or in this way, Krishna. And Sabha, so the whole point is it's the... Yeah, or you could say International Vaishnava Association or something like that. But I wouldn't use this term because this is specific. And the Rupa Nuga Vidyapeet, an educational facility meant for the study of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami's works. Jiva Goswami is also credited with producing some of the Gaudiya Vaishnavism's most influential preachers. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Sri Shyamananda Prabhu, Ramachandra Kaviraj, and Govinda Kaviraj, among others. Through these first three, Sri Jiva sent to Bengal the collected manuscripts of the Goswamis, along with instructions to preach the religion of the holy names and love of Krishna. After the scriptures were stolen and subsequently recovered, the king of Vishnupur, Vana Hambir, was so moved by Sri Srinivasacharya's devotion that he surrendered to him as a disciple, decreeing Gaudiya Vaishnavism as the official state religion. Yeah, so in Vishnupur, if you go, you know, even today, you'll see there's so many temples in that very Bengali style. Like most other places, you see the Bengali style temples, but they're all some variety of, you know, demigod temples. But there, they're all Krishna temples. And you have some very, very huge things. So that they were all Vaishnava. That was the official state religion. Jiva Goswami's fame also reached Agra, the seat of the powerful Mughal emperor Akbar. Akbar personally visited Vrindavan with the hopes of meeting this erudite, extraordinary ascetic. Although possessed of enormous wealth and influence, Akbar was humbled by the saintly character of Sri Jiva and his associates and became an ardent admirer. From then on, Akbar donated paper for book publication and officially patronized the construction of magnificent Radhakrishna temples in Vrindavan. I'm not sure that didn't happen unless it was done before. It could be two different things. But Rupa Goswami wrote the Nectar of Devotion on paper instead of on palm leaves. That was given by coming from you know, the emperor's court. So whether Akbar gave it or whether Man Singh, I'm not sure, because Man Singh did the temple, but I'm really not sure. I heard that one time they called Rupa down to visit his court, and he said he would come as long as they would have him back the same day. He could come down, discuss, and then go back the same day. And he was impressed, and he also gave him paper, because it was a new thing, right? You know, the Chinese had developed it, and then only these big personalities had stuff like this. But Rupa wrote, you know, so he was on the cutting edge of publishing, you know, how you say, technology. I've also heard, I'm not sure if he gave or if Man Singh gave, but the piece of land that's from Imlitala to Sringarvat to Vamsivat, and I'm not sure what's the fourth tree. I really just don't know. But four trees. That area was given, the papers were actually there, documented, given to Jiva Goswami, so that others couldn't come and claim it, or, you know, because you have so many other you know, in charges around. So just that it would be there, no one would bother, so that was given to him. Literary legacy. Sri Jiva Goswami is perhaps best celebrated for his monumental literary accomplishments. As far as our information goes, Srila Jiva Goswami composed and edited at least 25 books. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada lists his work as follows. 1. Harinamamrita Vyakarana. 2. Sutra Malika, a grammatical work dealing with derivation of Sanskrit words. Dr. Sangraha, a work on Sanskrit verb roots. 4. Krishnarcha Deepika, a work on deity worship. 5. Gopal Virudavali, a short poem extolling the glories of Gopal. 6. Rasamrita Sesha, a work dealing with Sanskrit composition. 7. Sri Madhva Mahotsava, a work describing the coronation ceremony of Radha when she is given the position of queen of Vrindavan. 8. Sri Sankalpa Kalpa Vriksha, an explanation of the eightfold daily pastimes of Radha and Krishna. 9. Bhavarta Suchaka Champu. 10. Gopal Tapani Tika, a commentary in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. 11. A commentary in the Brahma Samhita. 12. A commentary on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. 13. A commentary on the Ujjwala Nilamani. 14. A commentary on the Yoga Sara Stava. 15. A commentary on the Gayatri Mantra as described in the Agni Purana. 16. A description of the Lord's lotus feet derived from the Padma Purana. 17. A description of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. 18. Gopal Champu in two parts. And 19 to 25. 7 Sandarbhas. The Krama, Tattva, Bhagavat, Paramatma, Krishna, Bhakti, and Preeti Sandarbhas. So that means tattvas on the evidence, and then krama, Bhagavat, and Paramatma are on sambandha.
Krama is this Bhagavatam.
Krama, okay, it's a separate one, okay.
The seventh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so otherwise it wasn't working out right. Okay. All these works totaling 400,000 verses, as stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chari, Laksho, Granto, Tenho, Vistara, Karila. Chaitanya, CC, Antilila 4231. Like Vyasadeva is very much appreciated for Mahabharata, which is 100,000. Rupa wrote 100,000. And Jiva wrote 400,000. And this is all done by hand. You know, it's not, you know, also you can go out and buy your paper and get your nice pen and this and that. You know, like that. This is a little different. Okay, CC Antilila 4231. This output is equivalent to the 18 major Puranas combined, ranking Jiva Goswami second only to Srila Vyasadeva in Shastra prolificity. No author from any tradition even comes close to this number of Sanskrit verses concerning transcendence. As testaments to his remarkable abilities, it is said that whatever Jiva Goswami wrote was fully manifest in his mind, and once he committed a thought to writing, he never changed it. So he'd work it out. He wouldn't sit there and, well, this and that, think about it. He'd just work it out in his mind, that's it, he'd just write it. Right? So that's how he could just go through, like he said, doing page one, then three, then two, then four, then like that. Okay. Towards the end of his manifest pastime, Srila Jiva Goswami had the honor of hosting in Vrindavan Srimati Janava Devi, the pleasure potency and consort of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Jiva Goswami was gracious to all the visiting Gaudiya Vaishnavas from Bengal. He would personally attend to their lodgings and prasadam. In addition, he would often lead the devotees on the Vrajamandal Parikram, despite his advancing age. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita during Jiva Goswami's lifetime, in close consultation with him. Right, so you can see that it's very, all the whole scene that's happening, because Rupa Goswami's desire for establishing this mission in an organized way, Jiva Goswami did with the Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha. Right, so then all these acharyas, they're all the presidents of the Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Jiva Goswami lived in Vrindavan for 65 years. In Samvat era, 1653, 1596 CE, on the third day of the bright fortnight, just because the AD refers to an acharya, the CE doesn't refer to anybody. But the point is if it's going to make the work better for others, it's okay. They all got issues. Okay. On the third day of of the bright fortnight, in the month of Paush, this luminary disappeared from the vision of ordinary mortals and entered the unmanifest pastimes of Lord Krishna. Today his samadhi is located in the courtyard of the Sri Radha Damodar temple, while his bhajan kutir rests on the bank of Sri Radha Kund. In the Gauranga Deepika 195, it is said that Srila Jiva Goswami is Vilasa Manjari, a maidservant of Srimati Radharani. Okay. These three, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Jiva Goswami, are my spiritual masters, and so also is Raghunath Das Goswami. I therefore offer prayers at their lotus feet, for I am their servant. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 4227-237. So.
And then tomorrow we'll get down to start getting more technical. Just a touch.
Yeah. So you're saying that wasn't just poetics there?
I was like a sweet before the morning.
I see you're doing Brahmin Bhoja.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gaura Pai.